Hi, y'all. I'm Katie Parker. I am an alcoholic. And I'm so excited to be here. Oh, my gosh. To be asked to speak at a conference is always an honor, but to be asked to speak on the steps is like, bam! Man, I'm like, yes! Because that was not always my experience. You know, I can tell you my experience in an hour-long story, but the magic is in the work, period. And I didn't know that for a long, long time. First, let me get through all the preliminaries. I have a loving God in my life today that is so absolutely awestruck by me. He is just crazy about Katie. I did not have that for a long, long time. And because of that, I've had the gift of sobriety since October the 28th of 1984. And, that's a long time for me, boy, between cocktails. And, my husband, Charlie Parker, who I love dearly, he has a 5.5 months less than I do, so let's not forget about that. I love it. People always say, well, you know, time doesn't matter. It's like, oh, it sure does. Yeah. I know what household you live in, but it matters in our house. I mean, when times get tough, I just tell him, honey, it'll make a little more sense to you in about 5.5 months. So just hang in there. My home group is the primary purpose group. We study the big book line by line. It takes us about 18 months to get through the first 164 pages in the doctor's opinion, Dr. Bob's nightmare. And, you know, there was a time that studying the big book was just not my cup of tea. As a matter of fact, not even knowing where my big book was a big piece of my story in AA. I knew it was in my house. I mean, I knew that. I knew I wasn't going to get rid of it. But I didn't know where it was. I didn't really read it. And I did a whole lot of other things to try to treat my alcoholism. And I had no idea. And I think that it was out of literally a level of innocence. I did what I thought I was supposed to do. I mean, I'm never one to say nobody was and they should have been and blah, blah, blah. I mean, the inventory process tells me I really don't get to do that. But the truth of the matter is that I did do that. I did a lot of things in 26 years. I'm interested to see what the next 26 years look like so I can look back and see what I wasn't doing today. But I want to thank Lee so much for asking me to be here and all my dear friends that are here. There's something special about Texas, boy. And I love to let people know when I travel around the country speaking, I say, I am from Texas. I am not from the South. Let's get that cleared up. Texas is not the South. We got west of Texas and east of Texas and south of Texas. But Texas is Texas. I am 53 years old. I got sober when I was 26. I have a 32-year-old beautiful daughter who has two of my wonderful grandchildren. One's 5, one's 4 months. And I have a lovely son who's 22 who has his first son. And life has been really, really good. And I have certainly gone through tragedies. I loved what Kendra said last night. She did a wonderful job talking. And I loved what she said about, you know, when we're looking at our past life, what I have today is amazing, but it doesn't mean I didn't go through tragedy. I went through plenty of tragedy in life in general. I lost my mother when I was 8. My dad remarried 3 times in 18 months. Yeah, wrap your brain around that, man. Wow! You know, he's trying desperately to find a mother for the children because it was in the 60s and we had 4 live-in housekeepers. And when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, when I started drinking and it fixed that big black hole that we talk so much about, which is today I understand the malady, is that when that alcohol did for me what I had no idea it was doing, I had found the cure-all. And what I didn't realize was when alcohol quit working, I thought the problem was alcohol. I mean, it worked, right? It's very confusing. When it says alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful, go look up those words in the 1935 dictionary. It makes you can't figure it out. I couldn't figure it out at all. So when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I said, you would have drank too if you'd have been through so many mothers like I was. You would have drank too if you lost your mother. I had no idea. That had nothing to do with my alcoholism. Did not make me an alcoholic. What made me an alcoholic is that I suffer from an allergy. And that allergy, coupled with the mental obsession, makes me alcoholic. There's only 1% in this world that's alcoholic. Go figure. I thought everybody that drank like I drank was alcoholic. I had no idea that there was hard drinkers out there. If you drank like I drank, man, we must be alcoholic. And so I find that it's very important when you're talking about the steps that you know, every step has a preceding step to it. And it's important to know what it means to be alcoholic before you're going to get anybody to work into this process, right? I mean, who in the world wants to do this? I'd rather just kind of, you know, sit at the feet of the Dalai Lama or go to church. How about you? You know, I mean, it's a spiritual program. Maybe that's all I need to do to fix it. Well, I tried all that too, and that didn't work. Matter of fact, that made me stark raving sober out there. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I am the police of everything. I am the police of how you drive, how you grocery shop, how you walk over here. If you get up to leave, what the heck? You know, come on. I am the police of everything. It is in my DNA to judge you, period. I do it. I do it silently. And I have an outgoing personality, so you pretty much know I'm judging you. Some of y'all, you're self-manifest differently, and you're real quiet, and you don't think we see it, but we see it, okay? You know. Got all that going on, right? And so that's one of the things that I love so much about Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps, because the 12 steps are designed to get me closer to this power, period. Not church, not all this other religious or spiritual stuff. That's extra. That's wonderful. It can enhance. It's not to be put in place of. I put it in place of. And let me tell you, you put me in a church environment in untreated alcoholism. Wow. They're still talking about me back at that church. I could go off on some stories that I felt it was necessary. I told you what your problem was, because God Almighty, someone needs to. And if not me, who? I mean, there were times I really felt God had anointed me to be his right-hand person. Do any of y'all feel that way? Oh, yeah. Thank you very much for admitting it, because you all do. And one of the things is that when you're talking about 4, 5, 6, and 7, you can't, really can't talk about 4 without getting a little bit of an idea of 3. And once again, when I came into AA, I did AA at the best of my ability with what I had. The tools I had were sufficient to keep me sober. And by golly, that's a big deal. Now, I thought when you remove the drink problem, when the obsession was removed from me, I literally thought that was rocketed into the fourth dimension. I have a complete understanding of that now today that is different. That is not rocketed into the fourth dimension the way I understand it. See, what I did is you took away the drink problem and I began managing. That's just what I do. I get out there and I manage. As a matter of fact, I'm a pretty doggone good manager. I've been successful for a long time. Women that are alcoholic better be sharp when they're out there drinking. You know, it's a tough world out there. And we girls know, you know, I could get off on the whole girl thing, but I won't. But, okay, maybe I will. Oh, it'll just ooze out in there from time to time. I ask God to please keep some sort of a lid on it for me. I'm incapable on my own power to do that. But when you're a woman and you're out there, let me tell you, you are working an angle at every corner. You're just working an angle, working an angle. Is this safe? Is that not safe? Can he get me that? Can he get me this? Can I get that? Can I? You know, you walk into a place just, we look like we're dancing, but we're juking it. And there he is. Okay, yeah. Whoa. And then we make you think you picked us, and we have long since picked you, and, you know. And that doesn't stop because I get sober. As a matter of fact, I get sober, and watch out. I've made these skills just better because now they're backed by God. And, you know, trust me, the predators in Alcoholics Anonymous are the women. They are not the boys. And don't even get me on that one, you know. Well, this guy's a predator in the meeting. I'm like, oh, yeah, right. You're talking about the girl who at 12 years old was getting a creepy guy at the gas station to buy me beer, you know. Who's the predator here? Me. So let's get to business on the steps. Of course, I could just take 2 hours talking about me, but we'll try to keep it focused on the step work. So the third step is crucial to get an understanding of because of what the fourth step is about. Right? So the third step, just in a nutshell, right? I think John hit a lot of topics last night, but I want to just kind of reiterate in case you weren't there. The third step is more about, on page 61, it says, if only my arrangements would stay put. If only everyone would do as I wished. The show would be great. Everybody, including myself, would be happy. Did you guys not get the memo? Come on, just do what I need you to do and it'll all be great. I'm sorry, I'm not going to do what you want to do. Just do what I want you to do. People call that manipulative. That's it. Manipulation is not in our book. It is a disease of self. I suffer from alcoholism. Selfishness and self-centered is the root of my problem. Right? Yeah, so it's not the drink. It's not that I'm manipulative. It's not that I need several other programs. It is the root of my problem. And if you get me to hone those devices better, whew, I'm a sharp-edged tool going through life just slicing you up and justifying it. Poof, 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 poof. Needed to set that boundary there. You know what I mean? Detach. The alcoholic, unfortunately, doesn't get a lot of that freedom because I'll detach from everybody that bugs me. That's what I'll do. And that ends up leaving me in a spot that is not a good place to be. I've been there, done that. Now, it's not a bad idea to have that as to clearly know. You know, it says we can't take we have to take a kindly and tolerant view of others. Well, I'm telling you ain't coming over for Thanksgiving dinner. But if I see you at a meeting, I'll say hello and I'll be cordial. But I really don't like you. Are you with me on that? Oh yeah. See, I mean, I misunderstood a lot of that stuff. It's not about liking everybody. It's not about loving everybody. It's about taking a kindly and tolerant view and actually saying a prayer that I hope that they get better, that compassion that God gives me. And so what I'm doing is I'm thinking it's utopia. And then I love the next part. It says what usually happens. The show doesn't come off very well. Katie begins to think life doesn't treat her right. She decides to exert herself more on the next occasion. She becomes more demanding or gracious. See, that's where I step back and decide how I got to operate. And that's the deal, guys. I don't have issues. I'm not manipulative. I'm self-seeking, even when trying to be kind. My issues are my old ideas. You just got to get the wording correct in the book, and all of a sudden, the book starts to take on new meaning, boy. And it opened up for me in a way I was absolutely shocked. And so then it says, what usually happens? The show still doesn't come off well. Admitting I may be somewhat at fault, I am sure you are all more to blame. Right? And there's a line that's come out in AA. There's several things that happen in AA, and I was a big part of it for a long time until I read the book. Imagine that. And I read the book, and it flies in the face of the book. So it was like, oh, my God. I'm sitting in the meeting saying, my part, my part. Well, I'm looking at my part. I'm looking at my part. Book never says my part. Matter of fact, it tells me I don't even get to look at my part. It's 100% my stuff. It's all me. Because, see, if I look at my part, I love the way my buddy Bob does this. He says, what part is my part? Right here. Oh, yeah, this is your part. This is my part. And so what I didn't get is it's all my stuff. And sometimes it's unfortunate in inventory process. People go back to the worst and most horrific, you know, sexual abuse and all that. I'd like to set that one on the shelf. That's not the one we're going to talk about. We're not going to talk about when you try to get a new guy sober and you talk about God and he wants to know why babies die and you're like, oh no, we're not going there today. You know what I mean? And so I want to set the physical and emotional, the sexual abuse on the shelf. And I'm talking about everything else right now because that one is kind of dealt with a little bit different gloves on. But it says, you know, still the show's not coming off the way I want it to come off, right? Resentment and self-centered fear is what I'm driven by. And the third step does such a fabulous way of laying out how it shows up. Because if you come at me as an alcoholic and tell me it's selfishness and self-centered, I'm thinking, that's not me. I'm really a nice person. When I don't drink, I'm nice. I'll hold the door open for you. I mean, I certainly think you'll say thank you. And if you don't, I may shut the door a little sooner than it needed to be shut, but, you know, I mean, I'm, come on, I'll let you in traffic, but you better give me a wave. See, and so I misunderstood what selfish and self-centered meant. I understand it today. It means I don't think too much of myself or too little of myself. All I think about is me. Everything affects me. What's going to happen if you're telling a story, all I can think about is how does that affect me? And if it's a storyline that doesn't interest me, I don't want to hear anymore. Are you with me on that? How many of y'all have ever gotten in a conversation with somebody where you go, oh, shut up. Oh, my God. This is so... I got nothing. Oh, la, la, la. And then you're sitting there and what an alcoholic can do is amazing. We can go into a level of self-centeredness that I start saying things like, really? Uh-huh. And they may not even fit into the storyline that he's saying. You know what I'm saying? And then you go, oh my God, okay, focus. Get back. You know, it's terrible. The level of self-centeredness that we can go in is amazing. So then it talks about, it says, admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he's sure others are more to blame, he becomes angry, indignant, and self-pity. Column 2, column 3, column 4, right there. It works that way every time. Every time it works that way. It says, what's the basic trouble? Am I really not a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? When I filter my motives through this delusion, this is not a disease of denial. It's a disease of delusion, which means I believe a lie. When I filter my motives through my delusion, I have no idea that it's affecting you in any other way than good. Are you with me on that? I mean, how many of you guys have a great plan? Oh, this is a good idea. Everybody will love it. And then at the end of it, everybody's pissed off. And you're going, what? It never occurred to me that it would affect you in that way. Because I'm so self-centered, it never occurred to me to think about how it would affect you. That's how we operate. And so, once again, guys, I don't even know I have a motive till I'm upset. You know, it says the toolkit of self-will, right, is up there on page. We're kind, considerate, passionate, modest, and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, egotistical, selfish, mean. Yeah, you don't do what I want. I mean, it happens in AA all the time, doesn't it? How many of y'all have said this, for all I've done for that group? Oh, yeah, everybody. For all I've done for this family. For all I've done for all these people at work. That's indignant, right? And that's what we're talking about in the third column of a four-column inventory is my old ideas. What drives me? What might bother me doesn't bother you. Why is that? Because it's my old ideas. It's my self-esteem that's affected. It's my pride. It's my ambition. It's my security. It's my old belief systems, right? It talks about, we agnostics, old ideas and prejudice. We must let go of them absolutely. The result was nil. I don't even know I have an old idea until I do an inventory process. So I'm a big fan of, I prefer to do four columns frequently. You call it a four step, you call it your tenth step, whatever you want to call it. I do a four column inventory when you've bugged me for 2 days. Because I absolutely cannot afford to be affected. I will be blocked like that. And the next thing you know, I'm in traffic and that little smart car jumps in front of me and I'm like, come on, get that go-kart out of here for God's sakes. Bump you right off the road. Who came up with that idea? Blah, 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 blah. So it says, and this is the line I love. Is it not evident to all the rest of the players these are the things they want? And does his actions not make each of them wish to retaliate and snatch all they can out of the show? Have you ever had somebody mad at you and you think, you're mad at me? What? Oh, my God. You're the one who stepped hard on my toes. I'm retaliating. You know what? I mean, that it happens in the workplace a lot, but it really happens in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous a lot. I think sometimes in the rooms of AA, we're less forgiving to others. You know, I mean, how many of y'all sit in an AA meeting and you're like, oh, God, here goes Bob again. Bob, 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 Bob. You know what I mean? And if he says something against what I just shared, whew, have to take Bob on outside here and have a little talk with Bob. And then don't even get me started with the whole woman thing on that. It says selfish and self-centered. Selfishness and self-centered, that we think is the root of our problem. See, guys, that's in my DNA. It's in my DNA. My experience is it doesn't go away. It gets better. And I got a toolkit that is, I can go from a thought process to a tool, pick it up, and not react. That in itself is a miracle. I'm so connected to this power today, can't guarantee tomorrow, man. I can tell you, I can get off the beam in about 4 hours. But I'm on the beam today. And today when I'm on the beam, I've got clear thinking. Now, if you come up in my receiving line and you question me, yeah, I'm off the beam. All of a sudden, Alrighty. Pink. And, see, I'm on the beam at this given moment because I do a lot of things that I hope will keep me on the beam. But I also have a tremendous amount of experience of stepping off the beam frequently. So this selfishness and self-centeredness is in my DNA. My first thought is me. And if you hurt or threaten me, it's magnified in my head. Anything that comes at me that hurts or threatens me magnifies that selfish and self-centeredness. When it says my thought life will be placed on a higher plane, what I realize today is that the first thought traditionally is pretty ugly. And then I get to take that and go, oh, for heaven's sakes, just let that go by. Get a toolkit out. Do a 10th step on it. You know, resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, and fear. Do a 10th step on it. Let that just go away. That's not it, God. I don't know where in the world that came from, but we're going to let that one go today. You see what I'm saying? And so that's another process of the inventory. That's the way we look at it. And inventory, the book talks about taking inventory, taking inventory, taking inventory. If you've not put pen to paper and done a four-column inventory in 6 months, I'd like to see what the 10th step looks like, because sometimes a verbal 10th step will not do. I must write it on paper. There's magic in this program about putting pen to paper. So then it says our troubles are basically of our own making. Hallelujah. That is absolutely one of the biggest promises in the 12 steps. Because if my problems are of my own making, I got a solution. And that solution is God. But if they're a Vicky's making, and she's got to be okay for me to be okay, she's got to act the way I need her to act, I got no experience in you guys acting right. Ever. Ever. Nobody in traffic acts right. And the grocery store is a bunch of idiots. Are you with me on that? Oh, my God. Have you guys, the sense of entitlement, get behind a grocery cart and go come toe-to-toe with somebody. I ain't moving. Move. Move. I am on the right side of the lane. Move. I mean, we are, you know, now this is how it'll show up, you know, we'll go. But that's not what's going on in the ticker up there, man. I'm thinking about, I got a neighbor that doesn't like me and we can't figure out why, and I have surrendered to trying to figure it out. But I swear, given a good spiritual day, I drive by her, I wave, she turns her back. She turns her back every time on me. And she turns her back, and on some days, I want to drive over her. I want to run. I say out loud in the car, she has no idea who she's messing with. And, you know, this one. Whoo! So many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore. I can't live up to them no matter how hard I try. I can't wish away or think away my self-centeredness. Can't wish it away or think it away. So I can't work on my character defects. I use that terminology a lot in meetings also. I'm working on my defects. You can't. You cannot work on these things. The book clearly flies in the face of that. It says I can't wish them away or think them away. This thing is still. Then I become a self-seeker even when trying to be kind. And then before you know it, I'm mad at everybody. Everybody bugs me. I'm restless, irritable, and discontented because I've got a misunderstanding of what the third step is about. So I don't even know what I'm taking into my fourth step. I think I'm taking something into my fourth step with most people, myself included. We get to the fifth step. We see these defects of character. I start working on them. And I turn them into a self-seeker even when trying to be kind. I'm all screwed up. Man, I'm all screwed up. Now, I'm fooling the world quite a bit, but I'm not really truly happy inside. I'm not rocketed it by any means into a fourth dimension. I'm managing every day of my life, and I'm getting tired. I'm in constant collision with somebody or something, even though my motive is good, right? And so what I began to understand now is, okay, so the fourth step is a consideration of how self shows up. Manifest. Manifest means shows up, right? So how does self show up? Well, it's got to show up in resentment. It's going to show up in fear. And it's going to show up in harms to others with an emphasis on sex. Because we're all pretty twisted up in that area, wouldn't you say? Okay, everybody gets quiet. Yeah. My husband raises his hand. Yes. Yes. Yes, he is twisted up in that area. Almost killed me, but God Almighty, that is a one gentleman sitting right there today. We could get off on a big old tangent there, and I love talking about my husband. Anybody else with me on that one? Oh, yeah. I love talking about my husband's problems and his character defects, because they're just so obvious, aren't they? They're, you know, really, really, defects of character are so easy to spot in you. They just are so obvious. But in me, I'm absolutely blinded to them. That's the disease of delusion. So if it comes in resentment, how does selfishness show up in resentment? It shows up in the fact that you don't do what you did, something that I didn't want you to do. That's selfish. See, on my part, you did something I didn't want you to do. Big deal. You did what you wanted to do. Fear, I'm afraid you're not going to do what I think you should do. Selfish. And harms to others is I feel guilty for having harmed you. Not at all about the harm, but I feel guilty. See, until you forgive me, I'm not okay. Wow, that's a tough one. How self-centered is that? You see what I'm saying? And I know this is where everybody's like going, really? Let's start laughing again. Come on, come on. Get me funny. Get me some funny. Get me some funny. So the only thing that you got to go to then is with my own experience, you still have to go to semantics of the program. That's a big word for me. Pretty darn proud to pull that one out. I, unlike Kendra, did not go get my master's. When you do the third step, you have two timelines before you do an inventory. So when working with somebody, and I work with a ton of people, I bet I sponsor about 45 or 50 women. And you can sponsor a lot of people when your troubles are of your own making. Oh yeah, I'm not into the whole storyline. I'm not into doing therapy. I am not your life coach. My job is to get you in touch with the power. I hear the storyline and I stop you when I've heard enough. I've heard self plenty. I see it. Your troubles are of your own making. Let me show you where self showed up. Let me show you where you stepped on the toes of your fellows, where they retaliated. If you're still not seeing it, I need a 4-column inventory. Call me back in 15 minutes. We'll do it that way. Boom, boom, boom. Freedom. Freedom that fast. It's unbelievable. But see, for some reason, I'm going to get angry. I can't afford to stay angry. So if you're sitting in here with a lot of resentment and you could easily write 10 people on a list, then do it. Because you don't even know what you're missing. That's the cunning, baffling, powerful part of alcoholism. I don't know I'm not free. It's okay. It's a beautiful day. I'm at a conference. I'm having a good time. See, I don't even know what I'm missing. That's how I went through life a long time with it, trust me. And as you can tell by my personality, you better keep me on a short chain. You know what I mean? You leave me unattended, and I'm the girl flying across the car in the windshield going, get out of your car. Come on. I mean, I'll go crazy. And all I suffer from is alcoholism, trust me. There ain't no other issue. Untreated alcoholism, stark raving sober out there. Big stuff, man. So what we've got, it's got two timelines in the inventory process. Listen to this. Somebody says, when do I need to do my fourth step? We've just finished the third step explaining to them what the root of our problem is, right? It's no longer booze. The root of my problem is selfishness and self-centeredness. So they say, when do I start my inventory? I say, well, let's read this line. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step in which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us never attempted. Though our decision, that's the third step, was a vital and crucial step, it could have little or permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. So you can do it any time between next and at once. Where do you find that process? See, it's amazing when you read the book line by line. I used to go to meetings and hoped you read the book so you could tell me what it says. Right? And I'd pick up little bits and pieces, and I've always felt that acceptance is the key. You know, page 449 used to be in the third edition. That was always the pat answer, which meant you don't read the book. That's it, right? And to me, that is, if a mere code of morals or better philosophy of life were sufficient to work, acceptance would work. But when I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking, take your acceptance and put it where the sun don't shine. You know what I mean? You're asking me to try to work the promises and hope the steps come true. You know, it doesn't work that way. Yeah. See? Oh, I'll take on all those boys, won't I? So, then it says, I swear I run with some of the big boys in AA, and I absolutely love it because they'll sit around and they'll all be talking deep AA, deep AA. And then I'll get ready to say something, and I swear to God, one gets up to go get tea, the other goes to the bathroom, I go, hey, sit back down a minute. I am an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I, too, am an alcoholic, and I got something to add into this conversation. I have patiently waited while you boys all pee on the stump. Now it's my turn. By God. Oh, God. Oh, thank you. I tell you, you got to bring it with these boys, man. Because I swear, you'll be talking to a male alcoholic, and they just glaze over. You're like, yo. So, and I'm with my own people here. I love it. So I got my winks going. It's like, you bring it. So what I got here is, so it's next and at once, yes? And now here's the thing. It's followed by a strenuous effort to face, that's tough, and be rid of the things in ourselves which are blocking us. See, it says in We Agnostics, God is within. He's not out here. I kept talking to God like this. God, where are you? Up in the cloud. And it's in here. It's the still, quiet voice. I even heard God talk to me when I was totally drunk. It was that still, quiet voice that said, Katie, do something about this. That was all it was. Now that still, quiet voice, God, I have a conversation with God. It's unbelievable. I kind of do a little bit of the Oxford stuff. I do a little writing to God, right? I write a little something, and then I answer what God would say. Oh, it gives me goosebumps talking about it. I mean, it is. I've never had this, guys, and guess how I got it? You're not going to believe it. I swear to God, it's best kept secret in AA. 12 steps. I know. There it is. I told you the secret. The 12 steps, actually working all 12 steps all the time. Shocking. Yeah. I know. I was as shocked as anybody else was. And it says, because I just kept trying to get it out of meetings, right? I kept going to meetings. And don't get me wrong, I love the fellowship. I love you people. You are my people. I love conferences. I love hanging with drunks. But I was trying to get something that wasn't in a meeting. See, I'd go to a meeting to get relief. I never got the freedom. Now I go to a meeting, and I'm telling you, I'm bringing the solution, man. I am just all about the solution. And I swear, if you're going to AA meetings and you're sharing a lot and nobody's asking you to sponsor them, that's not good. That's not good. So if you're going to meetings and you're sharing a lot and you got so many people coming up asking you to sponsor them, see, it's because you have a solution. We drunks can smell a solution. And we can smell when somebody just wants to talk about themselves, right? The big difference. And so it says liquor was but a symptom. What? I remember the first time I read that, I went, liquor is a big problem. You take away the drink, and I got it from here. You're asking me to set down the only thing that has worked in my life, and that is self-will. How many of y'all agree with that? Absolutely. Oh, my God. I'm a woman. I've had children. I mean, what do you need? Another baby? Boom. Poof. Got it. Okay. What else do we need? We need medical insurance? Okay. Let me figure out how to do it. Boom. I got it. Okay. What else do we need? I mean, I'm a doer, man. I am the one who's, you know, spinning the plates. I got it going on out there. You know, if somebody said, you know what, Katie, the only way you can get medical insurance is you got to go up about 400 stories up there and wash that window. Okay. I'll do it. Scared to death of heights, but I'll do it. If that's what my family, I'll do it. See, and that's what we do. We are doers, man. And if you don't get down and dirty into that searching and fearless moral inventory, I love where the book says we swallow and digest large chunks of truth about ourselves. Have you ever had anything stuck in your throat? Have you ever chewed up something you don't want to chew up and then you got to swallow it? And right about here you want to throw up? I love watching kids when they're eating spinach or something. You know, they go, I'll be sitting there looking at my sponsor when she's telling me something where I can tell I am swallowing and not digesting yet the truth about that. And she has a tendency to bob her head. And I said, if you don't stop that head bobbing thing, man, I'm about to take you out right now. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get this down, and you got that head bobbing thing going on, you know, and she's all about it. So, it says, so here it is. So we have to get down to the causes and conditions. The causes are column 2, conditions are column 3. Therefore, we started out on this inventory, and I love it. Don brought this one out, and I put it up here. When it says a business which takes no regular inventory, he says more than one. Tells me right there. So if you've only done one inventory in your life, you only have an experience on one inventory. You do not have an experience on more inventory. So I don't really want your opinion, because I have an opinion on several inventories. It's unbelievable. It's rocketed into another dimension. When I got something in the fourth step to take to somebody in the fifth step so that I can go make amends in the ninth step that I would have never made because I had no idea I needed to. See, I mean, it is, you're missing a whole thing. And if I operated on the first four step I ever did, oh, I don't even remember the process. I remember we sat by a pool. That's about it. I mean, the new guy is like this. In their head, you know, they are not even present, you know. I mean, you get away the important things right out of the gate, yeah, but it's time. If you're working with me, we're doing another four step in about 6 months, the brand new guy. And then we're going to do one yearly because your 10th step sucks, yes? How many of y'all are willing to admit your 10th step sucks? Thank you. Yes. I'm just trying to work a basic fundamental AA program and mine sucks. And, I drove a school bus for a while, and I picked up that word and can't seem to shake it. So then it says, and when the kids used it, I was like, stop using that word. And then next thing you know, sucks is everywhere in my life. Terrible. So now here's the other line that I love. So it says, taking this regular inventory, we usually, a business will go broke. How many of y'all have been broke sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? Oh my, it's okay to say. Golly gee whiz, this is a disease of alcoholism. We don't get over it. You know what I mean? We only get to stay sober and connected to this power based on what I consider a lot of doggone work. And so it says on page 25, it says, if you are a serious alcoholic as we were, we believe there's no middle-of-the-road solution. So some people use that terminology. Heck, I was middle-of-the-road. I didn't know I hitched my wagon to middle-of-the-road AA. But until I got out the other side, I realized, gee, Manelli's, I was sitting in what I call meeting-based sobriety. I hadn't picked up my big book in a long, long time. And so it says, we were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other was to accept spiritual help. Sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think more of us are suffered from untreated alcoholism in the rooms of untreated Alcoholics Anonymous than we're aware of. I think there's more people in untreated alcoholism than there are new people, if you really want to know the truth, based on the amount of people I sponsor, and they come to me with time. And I'll tell you, if you got time, you're really hard to penetrate through that that ego. Because when I was hitting my bottom at 15 years sober, it was tough to get through to me because I knew it all. And so this inventory process really comes alive in that situation. So it says, the taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. I learned that the fact-finding is more of the sponsor's work than it is the sponsee's work, because you're living in a delusion. So your facts are probably fancied, most of them. Are you with me on that? And so what my job is as a sponsor, and I've listened to plenty, and I don't like this. As a matter of fact, I don't like two things. I don't like when somebody says, in a meeting, they say, I'm working on my fourth step, and everybody goes, ooh, like this is a bad thing. It's the thing that's going to set you free. It is the key to your future. The next time somebody says they're working on fourth step, start clapping for them. Say, good for you. They're scared to death to look at this, and then everybody goes, ooh. You know, and so I'm on this fact-finding mission. I also don't like the line, your parents did the best they could with the tools they have. Oh my gosh, if somebody said that to my daughter on her inventory, I'd say, bring me in. Let me tell you, I worked my ass off to get you to private school. I did about 9 million things so you'd have a better life. If that was the best I could do with the tools I had, pack your stuff and go. Are you with me on that? It's not that way. As a matter of fact, there are very few of us that sit in these rooms that had these parents that actually did horrific things to us. Do I hear those inventories? Ooh, yes, I do. I hear enough inventories to make my own opinion that the majority of people are in a delusion on their childhood. Absolutely in a delusion on your childhood as to how your parents did. And if you're the 1 or 2% that had the horrific situation where there was sexual abuse and physical abuse and all that, okay, that one, we're going to work with the tools that your parents had were not the best given to them either. But that's not the majority of us in AA. As a matter of fact, let me ask you this question. How many of y'all have children? Okay, do you love your children? Yes. Oh, wow, that didn't take long, did it? How many believe their parents didn't love them? Several. Come into this program. My parents didn't love me. I knew my parents never loved me. But you had no, you couldn't even, you answered that fast. Same as with your parents. By nature, we cannot not love our children. Your parents loved you deeply as you do. Your children can do anything. They can end up in prison having committed murder. And you would still love them, wouldn't you? You'd be very sad that their life was ruined, but you would still deeply love them and hurt. But when it comes to the delusion of alcoholism, and I look at my parents, I go, Mom, my dad loved my sister more than me. How do you do that? I have two kids. I love them differently, but I don't love one more than the other. You see what I'm saying? So it is my job on this fact-finding mission. When I get them to read their name, and then I read column two. And they get to give me the three things like Mr. Brown has over here. It says, Mr. Brown, his attention to his wife, told my wife I had a mistress. Brown may get my job at the office. He got 19 words. My favorite AA t-shirt is Mr. Brown needs his ass kicked. I agree. Don't you love that t-shirt? I swear, anybody in AA would recognize that if they saw it. They thought, oh my God. Now he does need his ass kicked, yes, but the truth is that when you read those three lines to me, I'm like a reporter. How many kids were in your mother's family? Because it's always mom and dad. Aren't mom and dad always on the top two? And for the one who keeps putting mom and dad up there, I just want to go, oh God, give your parents a break. As a matter of fact, I look at him and go, have some children. Could you please have some children? Jesus. But you go, so you got the person and they're sitting there, and so you got to find out where was mom in life? What happened to mom? And then you begin to build this storyline. And the first thing the person always says is, I never considered that. I never thought about that. I never realized that when my mother was working three jobs, she couldn't be there emotionally for me. I couldn't imagine working three jobs so that my children could go do this, this, or this. See what I'm saying? And you get this other storyline, and all of a sudden at that moment, man, you get that, you see God's compassion coming over their heart, which could not be done any other way but one drunk talking to another, knee to knee, eye to eye, because I understand that thinking. I have a delusional mind that tells me a storyline that is ridiculous. And I believed it all my life. I damaged a relationship between my father and I that was irreparable. Irreparable as far as I was concerned. And today I realize nothing is irreparable in AA. And unfortunately he died, and I didn't get to say it to him, but I got to say it to my stepmother. And it was an amazing, amazing amends process, so I got to keep moving on. So what we got is, so we got the second column, right? And we are spending a ton of time in the second column. Because I want a ton of time. I'm mixing four and five only for sake of time here. But I'm sitting there and I'm spending a ton of time in two. Because I need to understand the storyline, because I've got to convince you that the way you're looking at it is wrong. And it says down here over on page 66, it says, we turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. So the next time somebody's doing an inventory, you tell them, good for you. It's holding the key to your future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Wow. So what angle would that be? The other person. The person in column one. Let's look at it from their angle. As a matter of fact, I'm usually the guy in column one. Wouldn't you agree? I'm usually Bob, Bill, Jane, sister, brother, cousin. I'm usually that person. Given the right circumstances, I've done the exact same thing. The process of the inventory is pretty much to prove a hypocrite, yeah? We're hypocritical. I want judgment for you when you've done it wrong, but mercy for me if I've done it. Oh, yeah, well, hey, if I could just explain to you why I had to do it, you'd understand why you should have mercy on me. But if you do it, it's an outrage. See, that's self-centered. Self-centered is, it's not coming at me, it's coming from me. See, everything, people go, you know, my life, it just sucks. It's coming from you, not at you. You're the one doing it all. And you know, God, if you sponsor, you know what, you know, that whole, oh, it sucks and I don't have a relationship and I hate my job. And, you know, I'm just like, how many sponsees do you have? One. Like, oh, you need to get a host of people. You are way too self-absorbed. Get in several other people's life. You'll find that it's all good. And so what the other part that is so important in this process is that it says, that when we're on this fact-finding mission, it is to discover the truth in stock and trade. You got to disclose damaged or unusable goods. Get rid of them promptly and without regret. Now, this is another thing that, once again, when you study the book, words jump out at you that you didn't see before. We're undisciplined. Are we all in agreement on that? Oh, my gosh, yeah. You know, I mean, none of us are really doing prayer and meditation every day. None of us are doing an evening review. None of us are, you know, doing a spot check inventory every day. I'm sure somebody's out there saying, I am. And I'm like, well, let me follow you around for a little while and I'll be the judge of that. But the truth of the matter is, I mean, most of us, I'm real quick to say, oh, no, I fall short. Trust me. As a matter of fact, I want you to know I fall short. I don't want to be perfect. I don't want to grow wings. I don't want to be a spiritual giant. As a matter of fact, don't ever put me on that pedestal because I will fall. And I'll disappoint you greatly when I fall. But it says that we must get rid of these promptly and without regret. You know what that means? Once we have done this fifth step, in the promises, it says we will be delighted. You tie those two lines together, and it's keeping you from going from self-righteous to self-pity. See, once you've seen it from an entirely different angle and you realize that you are the problem, then all of a sudden we want to go to self-pity. So we switch self-righteous to self-pity. We haven't changed the self-peace. We just gave it a new face. And so it says, get rid of it promptly and without regret. So as your sponsor, I'll tell you, now listen, this is hard to swallow, but let me tell you something. Don't go to self-pity on it. Don't go to morbid reflection. Do not go in that spot. This is what it is, and be grateful. I love page 133. It says, how many know what 133 says? Just no, you don't have to say it. Never mind. I did that one time and pissed off a whole group. Oh, no. Retract that. Yeah, it looked a little spiritual pride-ish, didn't it? See how I can get, I'm sorry. I'm always asking God, grow in understanding and effectiveness, because the last thing I want to do is say, I got it right and you don't. That is never, ever, ever my deal. I'm just very, very passionate about this program, mainly because, and I'm going to just say it in a nutshell, my husband at 23 years sober endured a brain tumor, and I felt like the world was falling apart. I had no idea we were in untreated alcoholism. And the next thing I know, he's going to live behind the brain tumor. It was amazing. We were married 20 years. We were Mr. and Miss AA as far as the fellowship went. We had no program, but we were, you know, that. And then the brain tumor, he had a doctor, gave him some medication, not the doctor's fault. You know, it triggered the allergy, and he ended up dying of a heroin overdose. 23 years sober. So, you know, active in AA. In the fellowship. So I get very, very passionate behind untreated alcoholism sitting in the rooms. And so please, you know, understand that I'm coming out of it from a very close personal pain. And my own included. As a matter of fact, you almost lost me in the mix. I swear, if it hadn't been for Charlie Parker dragging my butt to a big book study. I thought I was sitting in that big book study going, wah, 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 wah. Who are these people? Oh, I swear Mark Houston's reading a big book, and I thought, who is this guy, and what book is he reading out of? I have never heard any of that stuff. Oh, the whole time, I swear, I got my arms crossed, and, you know, and needless to say, you know, you fast forward 7 years, and here it is. So it says, page 133, it says, we're sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. We're sure. Well, I'm not always sure of that, I'll tell you that. And we cannot subscribe to the belief that this life is a veil of tears, though it once was for many of us. But it is clear that we made our own misery. God didn't do it. Avoid, then, the deliberate manufacture of misery. But if trouble comes, see, there's always a little trap there in there for us. But if trouble comes, because it will, cheerfully capitalize on it as an opportunity to demonstrate his omnipotence. So when you are faced with trouble, you need a sponsor to say, hold up, hold up. Especially with women. I don't do a lot of crying. Don't come to me. There's no crying in baseball. You know what I mean? I mean, oh my God, women, they'll start the storyline and the next thing, you know, and then I, oh, stop it. Because you're in a delusion. It's not even happening. I'm not going to waste 20 minutes listening to you cry because it's not happening. So hold up, hold up, hold up. Let's talk about this. See, that's the problem, guys, is it's not about I don't let you have feelings. As a matter of fact, if you've had tragedy, we're going to cry. There's going to be some tears. But if you're crying because of a boss or a boyfriend, forget it. Or a member of AA hurt your feelings. We're not doing it. I'm not doing it. We're not going there. And so, oh my gosh, do you have any idea how long a woman can cry for? You boys know. Woo! I swear, I think you go to your mind. The Rangers game is getting ready to start. Come on, baby. Dry it up. Dry it up. I just got a few more minutes. I got to sit here and she'll be done. Oh, boy. And then you, oh, I know. I know what's going on. So it says, we did exactly the same thing in our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we search out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self-manifested in various ways is what had defeated us. It's going back to being convinced. That's what the third step says. You got to be convinced that self is killing you. But I don't even understand how self shows up. Get somebody to point it out. If all anybody does is listens to you read an inventory, I'm sorry, that's woefully insufficient. I need somebody to talk to me. I need somebody to tell me. I am delusional. What is going on? What is showing up? Because until I'm awakened, I got nothing to bring to God in 6 and 7. Wake me up. Make me want to puke when it gets right there. Show me the ugly. I've got to. I've made a whole life of ugly. My whole life is filled with old ideas. Oh my gosh. You can tell by this personality. I am a tough little chick out in the world. Now you know deep down inside I'm scared to death. Okay, so I've got it so manifested as tough, and yet if you come in my receiving line and hurt my feelings, I'm going to have to talk to you. You're bugging me, you're bugging me, you're bugging me. See what I'm saying? I mean, I can go all over the place easily, and then I just have to get to this place to go, you know what, God? I'm just going to let that person be that person, and that's just going to have to be okay. But I'll have to do work on it. How many of you guys have ever had to do work on somebody in AA? Oh, my gosh, I know it. I've written more inventory on y'all than you can imagine. And so, whew. Okay, so I've got about 10 more minutes. So if you're falling asleep, sit up. So it says, I swear, I tell my husband, he nods off all the time. I'm like, oh, well, sit up. You're like, pinch your arm or something. Give it a couple of those. Okay, so what we've got, and remember, the resentment inventory, guys, is 3 things. It's a resentment inventory, it's a fear inventory, and it's a harms inventory with an emphasis on sex, right? And so very quickly, I'm just going to go through the semantics of the way I see it, because I think sometimes it is strongly misunderstood. It says resentment is the number one offender. It kills more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. See, I'm going to get angry. I don't get to stay angry. I don't get to tell you, oh, well, I know, Bob did the best he could. What made me angry in the first place? If you make me angry, it takes me 10 seconds to write. I do an evening review to do a quick little inventory to write. What was it about Bob that bugged the crap out of me? You know, why was it that he really was rubbing me the wrong way? What's going on inside of me, God? And then I take those corrective measures into my meditation the next day. See, this is a daily deal on me keeping my finger on the pulse of Katie. Left unattended, it's dangerous. And so it says on page 66, it threatens my life 5 times. It says the business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found it's fatal. To drink is to die. These things are poison. They actually had the power to kill. I swear, if I sit there and visit with somebody too long and they're gossiping, a ton of gossip and a ton of pissed off at the world, the first thing, I don't say, you know, love and tolerance is our code. That's another promise expecting that steps will come true, right? I can't stand, you sling a slogan at me. You know, do not, it's not our place to sling a slogan. As a matter of fact, it's my place to look at them and go, when was the last time you wrote a four-column inventory? Well, I hadn't written one in a while. Come on, let's walk out back. I'll take you up. I'll miss the meeting. Let's go out back. I'll do a quick little four-column inventory with you. I'll do a fast little fista. I'll get you to freedom that quick. Right? Isn't that better than a love and tolerance is our code as I walk off and my angel wings are flapping? So in this inventory process, remember the third column is my old ideas. Remember that when you're looking at them. How does it affect my self-esteem? How do I think about myself? How does it affect my pride? What do I think you think about me? My ambitions, what I want to have happen. My securities, what I need to have happen. Personal relationships are just my deep-seated belief. If you love me, fill in the blank. That's women's biggest problem. If you love me, you wouldn't do this, 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 right? And then they do this, 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 and I got to make a new list. Right? I mean, that's how it works. And so that's what I'm saying is it's an old idea. They love you, period. And they're going to screw up, period. Get over it. It's going to be okay. And so then you've got the fourth column, which is the level of self that shows up. Oh, my gosh. Really, if you think about it, guys, self shows up in self-seeking, self-centered, self-righteous, self-reliant, self-pity, and self-delusion. It'll make you sick by the time you look at all of it. You're like, ooh. And that's my DNA. That is deep, deep into the core of Katie. I'm missing several filters, and so are you. We are missing several filters as alcoholics. We are only 1% that do what we do. And the world does not understand us. We will give our children up for a drink. Try to wrap your brain around that in a counseling session. See, you need another drunk that understands that. There is such pain in that. And don't get me wrong. I love counseling. Oh, my God. I'd be lost without the counseling I got. And some people who have tremendous grief behind that and can't get over it need extra work. Absolutely. But as a drunk, I understand why you did it. You may need more work behind it. And I work with all the girls at a treatment center. I love working with women because my daughter was 5 when I got sober. And I'm a big, big fan of that. I'm a big fan of helping moms. But it says, so then the fear inventory, the way I read the book, it says fear is a 3-column inventory. It's not a 4-column inventory. You may read it different than I do. But it says that fear ought to be classified with stealing. And you know why that is? Fear stops us from living. So you've been robbed of a lot of things in your life because you're too afraid to do them. You know, I've talked to women. I'm trying to get more women behind this god dang podium. And they're like, that scares me. Get over it. You got a good story. Go do it. You know, fear is going to rob you from amazing miracles. I'm afraid I can't do this job. You can do this job. Let's get you in there. Let's get you doing it. Let's write some inventory. Let's get you to those old ideas that are running you. And so what we have is it says we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper right there. We asked ourselves why we have them. So what was it? My self-esteem, my ambition, my pride. Then we have to go into my self-centeredness behind all of that. Then you have your sex inventory. And the sex inventory is very interesting. Sex inventory is a 9-question inventory. And you have to answer the 9 questions in a sex inventory. It's not a 4-column inventory based on what the book says. The book tells me that I have to ask myself, we reviewed our conduct. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Where did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, bitterness? And where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? So we have those 9 questions to answer. And that's in an inventory where that sex is troublesome. Talks about that you write a sane and sound ideal for your sex life. Oh, my God. Try to get some of these gals to do that, baby. I swear, you listen to that and you go, okay. So that sane and sound ideal you had, and now you're dating a guy that you say is not alcoholic, but he's breathing into the breathalyzer in his car. Is that, now, was that in your sane and sound ideal? Because I don't remember hearing that that was acceptable. You know what I mean? I mean, you gotta have something to go back to so you got something justifiably, right? And then the other thing, guys, in this my part, your part deal, it says that on page 61, it says, admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure others are more to blame. Page 66 says to conclude that others were wrong as far as most of us ever got. And page 67, it says, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, that's where my part comes in, it says, we tried to disregard the other person's involvement entirely. Right there. Doesn't give it to you. Where were we to blame? And so the other thing, too, that I want to say, because now I got to really cook, I got about 2 minutes, is that when you're doing that fifth step process, there is an hour in the fifth step that you are to take before you do six and seven. A lot of people say, I went home to do six and seven. No, you didn't. You still weren't done with the fifth step. Please follow the semantics of the program. You know why? If my grandson is alcoholic, and God, I hope he's not, I want the semantics of this program to be intact. I don't want somebody to have muddied the water for my grandchildren's children's children. It is the hour in the fifth step. You go and you take that hour and you do a pretty extensive review, just like you were studying for a test. And then it says in six and seven, oh, I know, she's not funny anymore, is she? She starts to get that hit. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we look at step six. I've had people say they're on step six and seven. There is no on. Read the literature. Tell me where on is. There is no on. No, you're lazy. You're not wanting to do any more work. Because honestly, you follow the literature. It says, after you finish the seventh step prayer, it says, now we need more action, without which we find faith without works is dead. We need more action. There's no sitting on these steps. There's no sitting on any step. You get, in my lineage and me sponsoring, you get 2 weeks to do a four-step period. I don't care if you got 4 days sober. 2 weeks. I'm not letting you decide how long it's going to take. It says, step six, we've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. I think what we have a tendency to do, and this has been what I've observed and what I did, is we have a tendency to go to the 12 and 12. And I'm not knocking the 12 and 12. 12 and 12 is a good piece of literature. Has a tendency to stand in front of the great. And it has a tendency to miss exact, clear-cut directions. I'm not trying to figure out God. I'm just trying to find what was objectionable and bring it to Him and ask for His power to get me over it. I cannot work on my defects. And so it says, are we now ready to let God remove from us all things which we've admitted are objectionable? That's a yes or no question. You're certainly welcome to hang on to whatever you want. I have. It says, can he now remove them all, every one? If we still cling to something that we aren't willing to let go of, we ask God to help us be willing. It tells me right there, you're probably not going to be willing to let go of everything. And then in the seventh step, guys, it talks about the good and the bad of me. We end our meeting with the seventh step prayer. And I never understood the good and the bad because I thought the good and the bad, I thought, well, why would I want to give him the good, man? It's all I got. It may not be much, but it's all I got. It, to me, I understand, is the self-seeker even when trying to be kind. I don't even know what's good. I'm so delusional. I run on motives, and I run on delusion. And if I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, watch out, man. I will run over everybody to get what I think I need. Thank you very much for letting me be here.